and NATO member countries' economies. It's a cold reality neither the English Channel nor Brexit can cushion. And if escalating weapons transfers and ever more belligerent public pronouncements are an indicator, the situation can only worsen for Britons and Europeans alike. Andy Worthington is an English journalist, activist, author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Four Fathers Band. He is, too, co-founder of both the ongoing Close Guantanamo campaign and successfully completed We Stand With Shaker campaign. Worthington's book titles include The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, Stonehenge, Celebration and Subversion, and The Battle of the Beanfield. Andy's articles appear at his website, andyworthington.co.uk, where he's inviting participants to join ongoing Close Guantanamo efforts. Welcome back to the program, Andy.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. It's always great to talk to you.
Well, it's always my great pleasure, of course, and privilege. Andy, please forgive me my outlander cheekiness regarding the royal family. But, you know, Charles III, I should say, is to appear soon on our most handled paper currency, the Canadian $20 bill. So I believe I got a bit in this game here. I have some stake in it. And that said, now that it's done, now that the new king has been crowned, Andy, is the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace, how is that being regarded by the hoi polloi over there?
I think it very much depends on the demographic involved, Chris. So, you know, as with so much that afflicts our country, really, I think, you know, Brexit, horrendous immigration policies. It's all designed to appeal to a minority of old people. And, you know, the support for the royal family is still in a majority in this country, you know, just. But once you start looking at it by age group, it's older people who are sustaining that interest. Younger people are not really very interested at all, funnily enough.
That's always been the story, though. I mean, going way back, anytime this subject comes up, and it does periodically, it's always that. So now that those younger people that you mentioned, now they're the older people. Does something happen to people when they cross a certain age threshold where they all of a sudden embrace the crown and really think it's a great thing?
Well, some people do, Chris, yes. And as I'm sure we're both aware, the kind of assumption that so many people make that people become more right-wing as they grow old is something that we're clearly both furiously resisting. But I don't find it difficult to resist. I don't see the explanation of why it should be the case, but in some ways it is. I think actually what's been happening over the decades is that the overall popularity of the monarchy is declining. So it would suggest to me that some of those younger people who are now, you know, in their 30s or 40s have retained their republicanism, which they developed in their youth. So I would give it another generation, and I would say that we're going to be then in a position where this whole absurd, farcical situation of having this lavish constitutional monarchy can finally be discussed. But I don't think we're there yet.
Well, despite the famously long-lived Windsors, I don't think that the next there's a whole generation between the next coronation, judging by the king's advanced age already. So maybe it's a much sooner. But do you think this parallels? I mean, there's been a great shaking of confidence in institutions generally throughout the West, and I mentioned somewhat elliptically that trend in the introduction, where across Europe, and it's true here on this side of the Atlantic as well, people just don't trust the institutions, the pillars of our societies, the way they did even half a generation ago.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and I mean, the monarchy is such an absurd thing in this country, as we saw at the weekend, Chris. And I don't mean to preempt a question here, but which I'm sure you were going to ask about. Okay, but the thing is, you know, we had Queen Elizabeth kind of skewed the story because she was queen for so long, and, you know, popular in this very superficial way, where she appeared to be the nation's mother and the nation's grandmother, and that it was kind of easy to overlook the fact that any time there was a big public celebration, the tolerance for dissent was absolutely zero. That's always been the case. Now, obviously, her having gone and the, you know, the magic of the 70-year reigning monarch having gone and the less popular Charles having taken her place, it was clear that there was going to be more call for the ability to protest. But, you know, what the police did, as they do following the script, really, for how to deal with huge royal events, is that they just, you know, it was zero tolerance. And they, it's led to this ridiculous situation where they've harassed people that they really shouldn't have done. But within the framework of what happens for royal events, that's kind of typical. Where it becomes more complicated, of course, is that the Tory government had just finalized their new Public Order Act to coincide with the coronation, which is an act that seems to show zero tolerance for even peaceful protest. So that's where I think it's going to be very interesting now to see how the police cope with the fact that they've been given these instructions in law. But that, honestly, I think for many senior people in the police, these cross a line where they're being told to do something by the government, which conflicts with their understanding that there needs to be some element of consent to policing. Otherwise, we move into very dangerous authoritarian territory.
Yeah, well, the Metropolitan Police have issued a statement about the preemptive arrests of the leader of the Republican movement in Britain, Graham Smith, and some of his coterie, preventing them from joining the protests because using edicts or parts of the Public Order Act, the third paragraph, I believe it was, saying that they believed that they might commit some kind of disruption. So they were arrested and then released without further charges. Owen Jones writes in The Guardian. Oh, and I thought when you said you didn't want to preempt my question, you were going to preempt me on the penis hedge that was carved in along the coronation route by some brilliant gardeners over there. But I see it's,
that one. I'll have to look that one up.
Oh, look at the picture. It's beautifully done and magnificently erect and humongous. But no, the Owen Jones writing for The Guardian, he's got an op-ed in today, and it's titled, "Consider the Coronation Arrests and Witness Britain's Slide Towards Authoritarianism." And he writes about the Republicans arrested, quote, "All six of the Republican protesters were apprehended under the new Public Order Act, which allows for protesters to be arrested on suspicion of intending to, quote, lock on, that is, to fix themselves to a target." Well, that's a tactic we've seen with Extinction Rebellion, and there are many manifestations and demonstrations and so forth over the last number of years. Is it plausible then to say that they're using these kinds of methods now as to shoot one across the bow of Extinction Rebellion? And although they, I'm sure, are aware of this anyhow, but are they really the intended target, you think, of this new legislation?
Oh, they were definitely the intended target. I mean, not really Extinction Rebellion, but more Just Stop Oil, which is, you know, become the more militant wing of the climate movement here, if you like, because Extinction Rebellion had a recent four-day gathering in central London, which was deliberately set up so that no one would be arrested. It was an attempt to increase the numbers of people involved in the climate movement, which I think they did very successfully. You know, tens of thousands of people came to try and work out, you know, how to get involved and what should be the next step, if there is any way to do it. That avoids arrest, because that's so off-putting for so many people. But the other groups that this is particularly aimed at, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, I would suggest immediately that if you're going to suppress mildly disruptive forms of peaceful protest, and I mean, you know, we are talking about slow walking with banners in a main road, the inconvenience is minimal, then what will happen is that people are going to have to think how to get more creative, surely. And, you know, and that could, I suspect that could lead to bigger unintended problems that, that they haven't foreseen. And again, I think that if you were to ask senior police about that, they would recognize the possibility of that far more than the idiotic fascists in our government, frankly. because they have set themselves on a course through Suella Braverman, with the support of Rishi Sunak, of at least, as they see it, establishing a position where any kind of protest that can cause any kind of disruption of, you know, at all, is something that shouldn't be allowed. And that's an extremely dangerous place for us to be going.
Well, there's already in Britain, I'm reading in Owen's article, a Defend the Right to Protest campaign. It's been going for quite a while. They're doing what they describe in the name there. But are we at a point now that there is just this, there's an obvious intransigence amongst the ruling powers, the corporate and government and policing and everything else? We've seen this when it comes to energy, at least. We've seen now, I was looking at your Twitter this morning, and you had a piece up on this Norwegian Equinor company and the Rosebank gas field that they're proposing to put in. This is an offshore. Well, maybe you can describe what it is and how. My point is that it's an example of a government that's determined that they're not going to change. So they'd rather crack heads than entertain leaving fossil fuel infrastructure or changing course in that regard.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I do think that that they are clearly, you know, massively supporting new oil and gas, and the Rosebank oil field that they want to open up will be insanely polluting all of what it is producing, with huge subsidies from the British government, will actually be for the export market. So claims that they're making about it being for the UK's own energy security are complete lies. So, you know, one thing is the direction of political travel of this government with regard to the climate crisis, where they're, you know, manifestly failing on every front. And one would hope that they're going to be removed from power. It was reassuring last week that the Greens made their biggest advances ever in terms of taking council seats, and that the Tories lost massively also to Labour and to the Liberal Democrats. They're clearly an unpopular government. The protest thing, though, I think all of this comes from Suella Braverman, who, you know, is able to be idiotically headstrong, prejudiced, with complete contempt for how the law actually works, even though she's apparently a barrister, and that she has just complete hatred for the notion that anyone can protest in any way. And if that sounds a bit extreme, Chris, I would also point out that she sees any person who wants to try to come to the United Kingdom to seek refuge as a refugee because they are fleeing terrible conditions where they come from. She sees them all as criminals. She, you know, they are passing a law at the moment that means you cannot apply for refugee status in the UK. Anyone who comes to the UK will be imprisoned, the intention being to send them back. But, of course, sending people back to dangerous regimes is not as easy as it sounds. This government has allowed itself to build up a backlog of 166,000 unassessed asylum claims, with people dotted around the country in hotels, unable to work, not knowing what their status is. And the government is now proposing to imprison them all on things like prison ships that they're establishing. And they will never be allowed to claim asylum in the country. They will be removed, or in fact what will happen is that the country will become more and more and more full of hundreds of thousands of indefinite prisoners in prison ships and former barracks and all kinds of places like this. It is the most shameful thing to be enduring as a British citizen, what's happening in this country at the moment.
Well, this Suella, too, she's, those that aren't aware, she's like this Cruella de Vil kind of figure who made her name by being a ultra hawk on immigration issues. At least that's that's where I came across her first. Yeah, when you mentioned this with these ships, I'm looking at a picture again from your Twitter feed, and it comes from migrantsorganized.org, and it's a photograph of this massive mega barge is what it's called, and it's meant to hold 500 asylum seekers. It consists of 222 bedrooms, they call them. I would venture they're more like cells, And looking at it, it looks like a network of shipping containers, four or five stories high, on a barge. And I'm looking at it, it's being towed all the way from Italy. I suppose this was used in Italy to stem or to house the many asylum seekers from North Africa. Is that right?
I don't know the origins of the boat, actually. I haven't looked into that. But, yeah, it's intended to hold 500 single men, people fleeing terrible conditions, asylum seekers. So that means, these are people, many of whom, in fact, the majority from the statistical analyses that we can find from what's been happening over the last few years, who are genuinely refugees, who will be imprisoned, who knows, indefinitely, really, in these conditions, because the government has no intention of processing their claims. And they have zero interest in processing the claims of any refugee who arrives irregularly in this country. And there are not any safe routes. The only safe routes that exist, and even these are laughable, are for a very small number of Ukrainians and Afghans. But, I mean, the numbers that have been accepted in this country are tiny, Chris. This is a government that is determined to break with the Refugee Act by refusing to allow any refugees into the UK under any circumstances. And they think that they're speaking for the people. They speak for a minority of the British people, clearly the most unpleasant part of the British population, but it is clearly also a minority. I think part of that came out last week in the massive losses across the board in council elections. And, they cannot be removed quickly enough.
Well, you've just tuned in. You're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Andy Worthington. Andy's an English journalist, activist, author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Four Fathers Band. He's co-founder of the ongoing Close Guantanamo campaign and the successfully completed We Stand With Shaker campaign. His book titles include The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, Stonehenge, Celebration and Subversion, and The Battle of the Beanfield. His articles appear at his website, andyworthington.co.uk, and he's inviting participants to join in the ongoing Close Guantanamo efforts. Andy, I've noticed that May 20th coming marks the 7,800th day of Gitmo's operation. I thought that was amazing, but somehow when I was reading on the Skype about some of the guys that were released a month and a bit ago, that they'd been held for 21 years. And I thought, wow, is that what that translates to? It's been 21 years, and it's still going on. Tell me, Andy, a little bit about the latest in your efforts and the Close Guantanamo campaign.
Well, I've been as busy as I can, Chris, because we're after 4 years of Trump, which was, the most awful time. The second most awful time, I have to say, was for several years during the Obama administration, when he met Republican resistance to doing anything and sat on his hands. But Biden has come in. He's recognized through numerous ways that pressure has been exerted on him. NGOs and lawyers and so many people, from the beginning met with representatives of his administration to say, it's 20 years as it was at that time. And the United States is continuing to hold men indefinitely without ever charging them. And that is simply unacceptable. If you're going to hold people, then it was like the parts of the Democratic establishment finally accepted that 20 years was too long. and as a result, almost everyone who's been held indefinitely without charge or trial, through various slow review processes that have always erred on the side of caution. So, repeatedly reviewing cases and suggesting, oh, no, we still think this person is a bit of a threat. Nearly all of those people have been approved for release. The problem is that releasing them is something that the Biden administration is finding very difficult. And that's not entirely its own fault. Partly there are essentially two provisions inserted by Republicans into the annual National Defense Authorization Act, the funding for the military, which prohibit any prisoner from setting foot on U.S. soil for any reason. So even if they wanted to, the government can't resettle a difficult to resettle prisoner in the USA. There is also a ban on numerous countries that prisoners cannot be returned to. And the main one of those is Yemen, but other countries are Libya and Somalia. And so of these men approved for release, and there's 16 out of the 30 men still held, 13 of them have to be resettled in third countries. 11 of them are Yemenis, one is a Libyan, and one is from Somalia. And so, you know, the United States government obviously doesn't talk publicly about its efforts to resettle these men, but we know that, you know, they're not finding it a cakewalk. Back in the Obama days, a number of countries took in people who couldn't be sent back to their home countries. But I think it's proving quite difficult. So I've been involved in efforts to get parliamentarians here in the UK organized to make a case for the UK helping out. Obviously, it would really be helpful for this to be a practical idea if Suella Braverman was banished from politics forever, never to return. And I've also been, you know, approaching various EU parliamentarians about whether it's possible to do something. So a lot of activity, Chris, but, you know, pushing on the Biden administration, because I really do think these men need to be freed before the next election happens. You know, Biden or the Democrats may not win, in which case we're back into, you know, a right-wing Republican horror show. And Guantanamo really needs to be closed, or if not closed, then it needs, then the people held there need to be reduced to the bare minimum of people who, you know, the government claims to have a case against, even though they have failed repeatedly to successfully prosecute any of the men that they claim have committed crimes, because the system invented to try them, the military commission system, is such a failure. So I hope the story in a nutshell.
Well, it's closeguantanamo.org. Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned Yemen, Libya, and Somalia, three countries that America has worked diligently to overturn, upend, throw into chaos through military and other means. They're all of them basket cases. And Somalia, it looks like it's going to start getting worse and worse as the day goes by. You mentioned on your site, too, May 3rd, the Guantanamo vigils in cities around the world, London, D.C., four of them in the United States, and Mexico City, Brussels and Copenhagen, and the inaugural meeting of the all-parties parliamentary group for closing the Guantanamo detention facility that are underway in Britain. It's a pity that they can't, that Mexico couldn't be enjoined to take these men in, and or even Cuba. I know they can't recognize the Americans' claim on Guantanamo, the prison facility in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, but it seems like for them to be accepted into Cuba proper would be a partial solution.
Yeah, I think unlikely to happen, yeah. Chris. But you know, I don't know whether the State Department are talking to Mexico. I mean, we have no idea. Obviously, they don't talk publicly about who they're negotiating with.
Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, too, Andy. I know you've got a lot going on right now. But before we go, just a last word. Julian Assange, I was speaking in the first segment to Ashley Jovic, a lawyer in the United States, talking about whistleblowers and their sorry fate. Any words on the latest on the Julian Assange case? I know that you were involved. It seems forever ago now, and hard to believe that Julian Assange is still imprisoned more than 4 years after being seized from the Ecuadorian embassy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's a very sad story. I mean, the fact is, Chris, that I knew at the beginning that the process of extradition from the UK to the US is one that basically requires no justification to be provided on the part of the United States at the beginning of the process. And therefore, what happens is that years and years and years are taken up in challenges to the basis of the of the extradition taking place, which in the end could come to nothing. But there is also the possibility that the British could intervene at some point and do something about it. So it was kind of inevitable that he was going to be stuck in Belmarsh for year after year after year. And of course, the worst aspect of it seems to me that I'm pretty sure that both the British government, who hate him, and the American government, who hate him, are happy to deprive him for his liberty on this basis for as long as possible, and honestly wouldn't mind if he died as a result. I don't think the Biden administration really wants to undertake a trial that spuriously involves Espionage Act issues, but is really about the freedom of the press, the freedom to publish information that, let's not forget, was leaked by someone else, in which Julian Assange, you know, his function was as a journalist and a publisher, working with the world's major newspapers on the release of these documents. And nobody else has been subjected to this, just him. It is an absolute disgrace. And I reserve almost the whole of my fury for the Biden administration. It is disgraceful that they haven't dropped this extradition request. Julian Assange has been deprived of his liberty for so long. He's a man in his early 50s now. He's got a family. He really should be freed, and I would suspect, you know, sent back to Australia and be allowed to live there. And I cannot understand why they don't drop it. Because, I really don't think they want an actual trial to happen.
Well, this is punishment by process, as outlined in ironically enough, leaked documents. Well, there's so much to talk about, Andy. The G7 in Hiroshima, at a time when Britain is sending depleted uranium into the battlefields of Ukraine, and the G20 in Kashmir, another contested area, Jammu and Kashmir, to follow. That's also contentious. Perhaps, well, I know there's always going to be another day, Andy, and there's always going to be more for you and I to talk to. I really appreciate, as always, you coming on the program and giving us the benefit of your view from over there in the old country to some of us over here.
Well, thanks very much, Chris. I always love talking to you. I really appreciate to provide a little old country perspective. really, the old country is doing so badly, but, you know, maybe one day we'll have something positive happen.
Yeah, there's rainbows in our future. And thanks, too, to Ashley Jovic for coming on. And you can go to her website, ashleyjovic.com, to find out about her struggles with Apple. Thanks again, Andy.
All right, Chris. Bye for now.
People spoke of sovereignty and forgot the patriotism only leads to war. Country back, oh yeah.